Allison.
Hey, Sam.
You know how in movies they have horse sounds like these?
Yeah.
How do you reckon it gets made?
They record horses walking along on a street.
Try again.
They record people wearing clogs on the street.
It's, well, in this particular YouTube video, it is a guy, it's a guy clapping coconut shells together. Try it. Next one. I want to do another one. All right. What does this sound like?
Someone relieving themselves.
It does sound a bit like wee, huh?
Or like a crackling fire.
Okay. And how do you think this sound is getting made?
Maybe they're recording a running tap.
No.
Someone like scrunching plastic bags in cellophane.
Oh, that's a good shout. But no, they're frying bacon. Now, what is this?
Sounds like someone eating corn chips.
Oh, yeah.
And really enjoying it as well. Or maybe celery. Someone eating celery.
Celery is so rank. It's someone just eating pickles. It's actually not a sound effect. It's just ASMR. While our executive producer, Alison Chan, and I, Samantha Groth, listen to how sound effects get made, you're listening to All The Best. On this episode, we'll be pulling back the curtain on how our sound gets made. As always, we're going to start things off with a story. Danny Stewart, a first-time contributor, sat down with Alison and talked about what it was like to make an All The Best story and what it means for her in terms of a training process, one that you can be part of.
I first heard about All The Best from listening to FBI, and I have been listening for a while. I thought that All The Best was like nothing I'd really heard before. There's such a diversity when it comes to the stories. So one in particular that stood out was on the theme of coffee. There was a few different stories. There was one that was someone who had to give up coffee because she was doing a challenge where she had to only have the rations that a refugee has.
I think it's enough food. What it doesn't seem like is much exciting or luxurious food, and there's a distinct lack of coffee, fruit and vegetables, and alcohol are probably the things that I'm realizing or dreading the most.
And you pretty much explain why I'm not doing this.
Yes.
I found that very interesting as someone with an intense coffee
Olivia
addiction.
Finished
and just the way the story was told and the sound engineering I thought was really engaging.
So you're done the refugee challenge. What was it worth it?
Yeah, it was definitely worth it. I learned a lot, actually. I learned that we have so much luxury in our lives. I also learned, though, that I'm severely addicted to coffee.
What was the idea that you pitched?
Basically, the idea that I pitched was around my trying to figure out the secret to keeping plants alive, because I am definitely am known as a bit of a plant murderer, and it's a running joke in my family because everyone else is fine. So because of that, I was really interested in finding out different methods that could help me. After I'd pitched my idea to All The Best, the next thing I remember doing was looking for some people who might have some insight to share with me, because it is pretty niche. But I did manage to find a couple of really great people who were nice enough to give me some of their time for an interview, which I'm so grateful for.
How did you decide whether or not to put yourself in the story?
All The Best is about narrative and storytelling, And if I wasn't in the story and it was just these two interviews, then it wouldn't really make sense, I don't think.
And how did you feel about being on tape yourself?
I wouldn't say that I thought it was going to be easy, but with All the Best, you create a script for your story. And so I just kind of thought that I would sit in front of the microphone and read out the script and it would all be great. But turns out that's not quite how it works. Writing for radio as well is totally different to writing an essay or writing an article, which is what I had done previously. You have to write in shorter sentences so that it flows better. So after I had all of my recordings together, it was time to start editing and making everything flow and putting it all together to form the story and adding some sound effects, adding in the ambient sound and making sure that it all made sense, put together. And yeah, so that's what I've been doing.
So how do you actually go about getting your interview tape and putting it and making a story out of it? Like, how do you do that?
So first you need to write a paper script and you need to make sure that it all reads well and it all makes sense. And then once you're happy with that, you start chopping up the tape and placing it where it works, where I've decided on the script that it's going to make the most sense and flow the best.
Where are you at right now with your story?
I'm in the final stages of editing it all together, deciding what music I'm going to use to score the story is my current challenge, removing any weird background noises as well. You'd be surprised how many odd sounding breaths and weird bangs the mic picks up. So I've been going through and deleting all of those little annoying bits that can be a bit distracting. And the last week I've been working on it quite a bit.
Do you hate it?
No, I don't hate it. I mean, I hate it right now. I'm sure once it goes to air on Saturday, I'm going to be so happy and so relieved.
It sounds like you're quite stressed right now.
A bit.
Like, what are you finding stressful about this process?
I'm very indecisive, so I feel like whatever song I open with is going to be the biggest deal and I need to put so much thought into everything, but I know that it doesn't matter that much and I need to chill. And also with editing, it's very time consuming going through all the little minute details. So I'm finding that a bit stressful because I'm like, am I going to have enough time?
Is the story that you've made what you thought the story would be?
No. So I think that's another thing as well. You start with this idea in your head of how you think it's going to sound, how you think it's all going to come together, and the end product is something totally different. And I think that's just part of the process. Along the way, you discover new information, you have new ideas, you get feedback from people at All the Best, and that steers you in a different direction. And yeah, it's just all part of the process.
I'm wondering if there was something that you thought at the beginning was going to be a good idea that hasn't actually ended up in the program.
Quite a few things. Some of the experiments in The Secret Life of Plants in the book don't really translate into audio and into radio, because that's something you always have to think about. Radio is not visual at all. And so without the visual aid, it still has to translate well and you still have to get across what you're trying to say just with words and music. And yeah, there was just like little chunks of interview that at first I thought, oh, this is really good, but then maybe it doesn't actually make that much sense to use it.
So what did you think it would be like to work on an All the Best story?
I didn't realise just how much work goes into making like 12 minutes of audio. It is a lot, and you end up with so much tape that you don't even end up using. You go through multiple drafts trying to put your script together. But I guess I didn't realize it was going to be so much work. But in the end, I think that's what makes it all the more rewarding.
That interview was by Alison Chan and Danny Stewart. A special thanks to Danny for letting us interview her and being honest about what it's been like to make her first story for All the Best, which you'll be hearing real soon. When these stories get made, they do require a pitch, and All the Best is always on the lookout for new and emerging audio documentary makers to pitch, produce, and learn. If you pitch an awesome story idea to us, we'll also pair you with a supervising producer. Email us at contact@allthebestradio.com. We'd love to hear from you. This week on All the Best, we're lifting the lid on the scandal that is us. Here is Danny's story about the secret life of plants.
When I was a kid, growing up in Sydney, I had a favourite tree. It was on the street outside my best friend's house. We were about 6 or 7, and we would climb the tree, sit in the tree, talk to the tree, and sing ABBA songs to it for hours on end. We even named it after one of the band members. Then one day, the local council cut a hole in the tree because it was growing close to some power lines. I was devastated. I felt like I'd lost a friend. There was now a hole where we used to sit. We stopped singing to the tree. After that, the tree seemed sadder. Something in the air around it had changed.
There's this tradition going back to the 70s of kind of anecdotal stories that people have about their feelings about plants.
That's Will Cornwall, associate professor at UNSW. He studies plant ecology. I'm someone with a reputation as a plant murderer, so I was interested in this tradition of plants sensing the feelings of people, which led me to a book called The Secret Life of Plants. It was written in 1973 by Peter Tompkins and Christopher Bird. Their main claim is that plants are able to sense and feel emotions, and they try to prove this through controversial and quirky experiments. I decided to test out some of the wackiest experiments from the book in the hope of putting an end to my streak of dead pot plants. Many of these experiments have been widely discredited as pseudoscience, but The Secret Life of Plants has had a lasting cultural impact. Their ideas have awakened an air of romanticism around our relationship with plants. One of the most well-known experiments in The Secret Life of Plants involves connecting the leaf of a Dracaena plant to a polygraph machine. The guy running the experiment was a former CIA agent, Clive Baxter. A polygraph machine normally measures the pulse and blood pressure of a person. Baxter imagined the plant on fire, and the needle went all over the place. The surge of electrical activity suggested that the plant felt stress, so Baxter's conclusion was that this was evidence the plant was reacting to his thoughts. I asked Will Cornwall if this is possible.
No. I think that the important thing when thinking about these old studies is the concept of replication, and if you can repeat that experiment somewhere else with a different plant and with an appropriate control, then you can tell if it's a finding that is really worth building on and worth thinking about in terms of how the plants are actually reacting to us. There are lots of complicated ways that plants communicate signals through the leaves and stems and roots, but I don't think that's a good example.
Okay. So perhaps there isn't any scientific backing that plants are affected by our thoughts. But still, I decided to run a little experiment of my own. I was hoping to uncover the secret to keeping a plant alive. So I bought myself a little Dracaena tree. My hypothesis was that if Baxter, imagining his Dracaena on fire, made the plant stressed, maybe if I imagined mine growing, it would promote relaxation and growth. I'm thinking about you growing taller, even taller. Don't die.
Stay alive. Keep growing. Taller is better. Keep growing. Higher and higher. Reach the sky. Keep growing. Higher, higher, higher. Surprisingly, or maybe not so surprisingly, it didn't really work. If nice thoughts didn't work, maybe music would do the trick. In another experiment, pumpkins were played classical and rock music. Plants exposed to Beethoven, Mozart, Schubert, and other 18th and 19th century European composers grew towards the radio, one of them even twining itself lovingly around it. When they played rock music, the other pumpkins grew away from the radio and even tried to climb the slippery walls of their glass cage. This was another of the claims I had to test out for myself. I played clarinet in high school, so thought I'd whip it out and play some classical stuff, see if my plant liked it. I didn't notice any change in my little Dracaena after playing it some classical tunes for a week, but it was still alive, so maybe the music was having a positive impact like the Secret Life of Plants told me it would.
So do you think if I were to play some Mozart on my clarinet to a plant, would that have any effect on its growth?
By itself, probably not. If you're just playing Mozart directly to the plant and there's no other interactions, I think it's very unlikely that the plant will do anything differently. That said, there was just a paper published in Mississippi State where they played AC/DC at plants. What this kind of heavy metal music did was it scared away the ladybird beetles that were eating the aphids. And because the ladybird beetles were gone, there were more aphids and the aphids ate the plant more in the presence of AC/DC relative to the absence of AC/DC. And that was just published this year. Very well replicated, very good controls. So there are effects, can be effects of music, but sometimes it'll go via some unknown pathway like the animals that eat the plant.
People are quick to dismiss the theories of the secret life of plants, but there's still a lot of interest in the life of plants. Prue Gibson is an academic at UNSW Art and Design who researches plants and plant philosophy. She's been part of this contemporary move back towards these ideas explored in the 1970s. Prue told me about a recent experiment conducted by her colleague, Monica Gagliano, which drew on the idea of Pavlov's dog.
It proved that dogs had sentient capacities and could decision make and remember.
A scientist named Pavlov rang a bell, fed the dogs, rang a bell, fed the dogs, and then eventually rang the bell, didn't feed the dogs, but found the dogs still salivated, because they had learnt to expect food after hearing the bell.
That threw animal studies into an explosion of excitement, because for a long, long time, in terms of philosophy, we assumed that animals had less cognitive capacities than humans. So what Monica did was she mirrored that experiment with her peas experiment. Instead of using the bell as the trigger, she used wind, like a fan, pushing air, and instead of the food, she used light.
Plants need light to grow, not fans. The scientists would move the light and fan together, and the peas would grow towards them. When the scientists took away the light and just left the fan, the peas still grew towards the fan. So the peas had trained to follow the fan.
They would grow towards the trigger, which was the fan, even if the option was there for growing towards light. Everyone goes, oh, yes, well, we know that. We always knew that plants were clever. You know, we all know that if you care for them and talk to them and all of those things that we have kind of already known because that's our experience, this kind of work is proving what a lot of us already felt intuitively, number one. But number two, there's something about Monica's work which is really radical, which whenever I tell people about Monica's work, they're like, yeah, okay, that makes sense. So the peas, you know, they learned and they grew towards the movement of air. So what? And then I go, yeah, but dogs have brains. Humans have brains. Plants don't have brains. So it's really massively exciting. It's like, well, what the hell is going on? So this is, you know, a really exciting area of distributed intelligence in the plant world that we're only just starting to find out via the plant scientists.
Not everyone is keen on a resurgence of the types of experiments in the secret life of plants.
I think it's a little bit dangerous to use our intelligence as the analogy to understand plants. I think it's a little bit narcissistic, I think, to imagine plants as people. I think it's much more accurate to think about things from their perspective.
I've been on quite a journey trying to figure out the secret to keeping a plant alive. I've decided that maybe the secret life of plants shouldn't be taken so literally as a doctrine of plant science. But my Dracaena is still alive. It's hard to say whether that's because of my playing it classical music and sending it nice thoughts, or just that I finally managed to pick out a plant that's so easy to look after, even I can't stuff it up.
That story was by Danny Stewart, and the supervising producer was Alison Chan. We talk a lot about supervising producers and mixing and compiling on this show, but what do those people actually do? Supervising producer Zasha Rosen, episode compiler Jess Meyer, and the boss, Alison Chan, sat down on a Friday afternoon, just before deadline.
Right now we're at FBI Radio in Redfern in Sydney.
Are we in a studio?
Afraid not. Which is why you can hear the street. We're on Botany Road and you're probably getting a bit of ambience as we speak.
I have a question about the paper drafts, because this is something that I was actually going to ask you. I got the script, not the draft, and I don't know what the numbers mean.
One thing that we do when we're transcribing, we're writing down like what people are saying, but we're also putting timestamps on what they're saying so that we can figure out.
So this thing happened at this moment in the recording.
Yeah, so at like 15 minutes 30, they said, and then I found my cat.
So it's your way of kind of working out how long the script is going for.
It's not so much about how long the script is going for. It's just so that I know where the takes are.
Okay.
And then sometimes I might indicate which take I prefer at the time.
So in a sense, it's the good bits.
Yeah. And so, like, this is because we're a pre-recorded show. And it means that we can do multiple recordings of the same thing.
Yeah.
Until we're at a point where we're happy with how it sounds.
Okay.
I reckon we should probably try to wrap up there just because you're going to have a lot of tape.
Yes. And also, we also need to finish this week's show.
Oh, actually, in that case, what does it feel like about the show? How do you feel about the show right now?
So it's 2 o'clock on a Friday afternoon.
Look, we're pretty far off, I think, at this point.
Like, far off having the show ready or far off worrying about the show?
Far off having it ready, do you think?
Yeah. So what have you done so far today, Jess?
I've been working on the banner, so the start of the show, and I've basically just been dropping it all into place, getting all the audio files and making sure that everything is where it needs to be. And I guess once we have that, then we have to make sure that everything sounds how it should be and there's no gross noises.
So, like, right now we have kitchen noises in the background because we've decided for some reason to record at the table we were talking at rather than going into the empty studio. But, like, what is the sound of the show? What does it sound like? Like, what's different when you put it through the edit?
Yeah. I think we try and make it sound a bit cleaner, tidy it up a little bit, noise reduction. That's something that we were going to work on when we go back into work on it after this. And I guess making it sound natural with the sort of, you know, having the music fade out or, you know, when someone starts talking, making it sound like that's where it should be and not that's just where you've chucked it and then, you know, hoping it sounds okay.
So in an ideal world, we would have at least 6 weeks production lead time before each story that goes to air on All the Best. that the nature of the beast is such that sometimes you're planning for it like just 2 weeks out from your first broadcast.
I also find like a lot of the time you put all of your best planning into it and everything is very sensibly arranged, that all goes wrong, and then 2 weeks before you're doing something completely different to what you planned to get the same story out sometimes.
Yeah, but nothing ever goes wrong. Just joking.
This episode of All the Best was compiled and mixed by Elena Godwin. All the Best would like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the lands on which we make these stories and pay our respects to elders past, present, and emerging. All the Best is made at FBI Radio in Sydney in association with SYN and 3RRR in Melbourne. Our executive producer is Alison Chan. Our Victorian State Coordinator is Jordan Fennell. Our Community Coordinator is Chloe Gillespie. Matilda Fay is our social media producer, and I'm Samantha Groth, your host. All the Best is heard across Australia on the Community Radio Network and is made possible by the Community Broadcasting Foundation. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter and find all our other episodes at allthebestradio.com. We're also a podcast, so subscribe so you can listen to our final product every week. And while you're there, give us a review in your favourite podcast app.